Expo Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I hear the voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine of this generation, my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Hey there, kids and keyboard biters. Today we have a special guest with us by the name of Dirk Manning, author extraordinaire and guy who goes to a shit ton of conventions. Hey, Dirk, how's it going?
Good. Thank you for having me on during my reprieve from the shit ton of conventions.
Well, see, I've been trying to get you on for a while, and every time I try, it's usually in the summertime, it's like, wait a sec, he's got a shit ton of conventions going on. It's like, that's probably not going to work.
Yeah, I am off the road now until February, middle of February, and I closed out 2016 with 31 comic book conventions, horror conventions, and signing appearances.
Nikes.
Yeah, to put that in perspective, you know, I mean, obviously there's 52 weeks in a year, and I did 31 shows and conventions, so yeah, I tour a lot. Not bad for a comic book writer.
You know. Well, that's how you make the money on it, right?
Yeah. I mean, definitely a big part of it, especially when you do creator-owned comics of the horror variety. You really got to get out there and grind, man, and just put yourself out there. So, yeah, I'm very fortunate. I have very, very strong convention presence. People like to see me in their towns, apparently, and I get to go and sign books, hang out, and a little karaoke, eat some ice cream, see my friends, and just rock and roll, man. And well, by rock and roll, I mean signing a bunch of comic books and chatting with everybody, and sometimes literally rock and rolling.
Awesome. And actually, you're one of the people that I suggest when people say, hey, how can I become good at it? It's like, well, here's one of the people you should look at what he's done. He's been doing this game for, crap, I've known you since MySpace days.
Yeah, I know, right? I was thinking about that. And this is the first time we've ever talked in person, I think.
It is. We've chatted a couple times on, like, the Facebook spaces, and that's
even
about
in
it.
In the MySpaces back in the day, too.
Oh, yeah. My God, MySpace. Man, I have memories.
I miss, you know, I'm going to keep it real. I miss MySpace. I miss the old MySpace.
You know, it's still there.
But it's not the old MySpace when they made everyone reboot their accounts. I mean, I owe a lot of where I am now to MySpace because when I was self-publishing my comics online, like Nightmare World and Tales of Mystery, what ended up happening was like MySpace was a great way for me to connect with other fans of horror comics and horror in general and comics and heavy metal and ice cream and all that's good in life. And really, it really gave me a lot of the groundswell of support I needed to do what I do now.
Absolutely. And I had a thought, but it went away somewhere, but I'll come back to, I'm sure, at some time.
Oh, I was going to put in the cheap plug for Right or Wrong because you said I'm a guy that helps people get there, but I won't be that gratuitous.
No, yeah. No, that's actually quite good because it's in my list of things to talk about.
Okay.
yes, I give them an example when people are saying, well, what's the right things to do? It's like, well, look at Dirk. Dirk goes out and he engages people. He started with MySpace. It was a forum, open to space. You do your stuff. You talk. You just talk to people. You bring them together. You bring them into your world, and then you share your world with them.
Yeah, you know, and I always said, you know, if I – this is from – not that I'm like anybody huge now per se, but even when I was first getting started, I always said if I – we are old. I see Jack in the chat. I'm sorry. I always said if I got to the point when I was making comics, and this is before I actually had my first comic printed, even before I was published online, I told myself, if I ever get to the point that I'm making comics, I will do everything in my power to help other people get there. I'm getting slowly caught up on Game of Thrones, like the last season, so I can finally make, because I'm off the road now, so I can watch them on Blu-ray. So I'm like, I just got to this episode, so I'm not going to spoil too much, but so no one say anything. But I can just say I can hold the door, you know?
I just
finished that one. So, but I always said I'm going to hold the door for people. You know, I'm going to do everything I can to help other people make comics. And that's what motivated me to do a column on Newsarama for years called Right or Wrong. And then I put it out as a book called Right or Wrong, A Writer's Guide to Creating Comics. Because I write. I don't draw. You know, I can't even draw a crooked line. I have many, many, many very talented friends who agree to work with me, sometimes probably against their better judgment. But, yeah, I just want to do what I can to help other people out. That's what I did Right or Wrong, Volume 1, available on Amazon. And
Other fine stores.
Yeah, Well, mainly Amazon. We actually sold out through Diamond. We sold out through Diamond, and so mainly it's available on Amazon now. But I'm hoping to work on this year. Well, 2017, really grind out and start writing the actual chapters and formatting Right or Wrong Volume 2, which is about, if you've read Right or Wrong Volume 1, you should be in a good spot to be able to make comics. With Volume 2, it's going to be, now that you have a comic or a book, what do you do now? Doing conventions, kind of like we talked about a minute ago, doing conventions, doing all this stuff, you know. So, but again, it's just paying it forward, man. I think if more people paid it forward, the world would just be a better place.
Well, a funny thing about that is I used to have a former boss who actually, he was South African, and they actually have a saying, you always help the person below you because you never know when they're going to be above you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it's just, you know, I heard this example again the other day, the stone soup story. Someone in town's making stone soup, and someone says, stone soup, well, that sounds gross, but I have a couple of carrots, I can throw those in, and oh, I have a little lettuce, I can throw those in, you know. And next thing you know, everyone chips in a little bit, and the whole town's got this amazing soup. It's the same thing with everything. So many people, when they break into, and I'll use comics as an example, when they break into the comic book industry, they are just terrified to let anybody else know how they got there because they're afraid that they're going to take their spot. And if your only goal in life is to, like, write Batman or to write Spider-Man or something like that, then, yeah, there's a lot of people gunning for you. But you should be, in my opinion, I encourage everyone, tell your own stories. Do the thing you want to do. Create the book that only you can create, and no one can ever take your spot because you'll carve out your own spot and you'll own it forever.
I like that.
It's you know, just how I roll, I guess. You know, it's not the easiest road. It would, my life would probably be easier if I was trying to write Batman, but
there's so many people writing Batman already, so
yeah. And like Spider-Man, like Dan Slott is going to write Spider-Man until they pry it from his cold dead fingers, you know. So really, you just got to do your own thing, man. Do your own thing. Do stories that only you can do, and you'll always have a home in the industry.
Yeah. And okay, so you went into comic land. What would be your favorite comic right now? Of the millions, of the roughly 1,000 that come out every month.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I think I really love Dan Doherty's Touching Evil. It's definitely one of my favorites. I think a lot of my favorite comics are ones that friends of mine write. I have very talented friends. You know, Touching Evil by Dan Doherty is just fantastic.
I have not read that one yet. What's it about?
It's good. It's about a lawyer who she inherits this curse, and anybody that she touches, if they're evil, they immediately die. But they then live in her brain and her psyche, and she can't get rid of them. So the more people that she touches and starts like dying, they all start living in her head, and she can't get rid of them. And he writes it and draws it. I mean, he's just hella talented. For the Tales of Mystery Volume 3 Kickstarter, we did a Tales of Mystery Touching Evil crossover called Touching Reevil. So that was a lot of fun. But
mention Mercy Sparks, because that's one of my favorites.
We did. Mercy Sparks is good. Mystery did a crossover with Mercy Sparks, as a matter of fact. So I know Josh is doing the year one story arc right now, which I'm really excited about.
Yep.
Eric Powell's Hillbilly. Fantastic.
Ooh, that one's awesome.
I love Eric. I'm a huge mark for Eric Powell. I love just about everything he does, with very limited exceptions. And he is so good.
And the covers on those books, they're freaking awesome.
Covers are great. I loved The Goon dearly. I'm desperately waiting for The Goon to come back. You know, or if or when it comes back, or it comes back as, you know, Lords of Misery or whatever. But right now I'm just loving the hell out of Hillbilly.
They recently had a Goon Hellboy crossover.
Yep. Yeah, that was good when Hellboy crossed over in Goon. Joe Hill's doing more Lock and Key coming up, which I'm super stoked about. I'm a huge mark for Joe Hill, who's Stephen King's son. Those are, and honestly, I don't think this comic gets nearly the love it should at this point. I'm still a huge Walking Dead fan.
Absolutely.
Huge Walking Dead fan. Like a lot of Kirkman stuff, but really Walking Dead is great, and Invincible is just always fantastic. So those are, in a nutshell, my guilty pleasure comic, which I shouldn't feel guilty about because it's just really good, is Savage Dragon 2. read Savage Dragon's issue 1. That is a book that continues to be revolutionary every month it comes out, and it's just so freaking good. So that's my short list, I guess.
Okay, well, let's now go and talk about your comic.
All right, yeah, now that people know what I like, they can determine.
Exactly. I mean, I have a comic store as well, so people ask, what do you like to read? It's like, I like to read this, I like to read that, I like to read that. But by the way, hey, do you want to try this? Like, what's it like? Well, do you like horror comics? Oh, I guess. Try this. This is good horror comics. Right, you like sci-fi? Right. Here's some good sci-fi ones. So many things to choose from. Tales of Mystery. Personally, yes. The first time I said Mystery, it was like, what the hell? There's supposed to be something going on with it. I know it. Oh! So I love the name.
You will not be the last person. Every convention or signing I go to, every time, I'll go up and, I'll be the show and I'll be there. And someone will come up and say, oh my gosh, I really love Mystery. I read volume 1. You know, I bought volume 1, 2 last year. I'm really looking forward to volume 3. And they go, Mystery. And they'll say about 3 or 4 times and they'll stop and go, Mystery. Oh my God, like Mystery, Tales of Mystery. Did you do that on purpose? I'm like,
Duh.
No, I say, do what? Yeah, they're like, look at me, and I look at them, and we start laughing. But yeah, Tales of – people continue to discover the joke of that name. I'd like to think I'm really funny. I don't know if I always succeed or not, but
It works. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
So
but
how
I'm
did,
glad you like it, man.
How did Mystery, the Tales Thereof, come to – because I know I have the first comic series and the second comic series, uh-huh. But I didn't get the third comic series. I just got the trade.
Yeah. Well, what we did was volume 1 and 3 came out as a trade paperback collection, and then volume 2 we actually did issues. I want to try to kind of penetrate the direct market with issues. Almost everything I do goes straight to trade, which is good for me being on the road because people can just buy the book. I approach my comic writing career, I think, a lot like a novelist in that sense. But, the flip side of that is – if people don't know my work, sometimes they get very nervous about, well, I don't want to spend 15 or 17 or 18 bucks on this guy's book. I've never heard of him. I'm like, well, so I decided, okay, Tales Mystery Volume 2, here's the issues. First issue's $2. And we did well with it and stuff. It was fine. But I just much prefer just putting out the book, being done. But
the Netflix model.
Yeah. I was Netflix before Netflix, man.
There you go. See? Leading the charge, making ways for good things.
Yeah, and but in regards to where he came from, my first comic series was Nightmare World, which is a series of short stories. It's 52 short stories. Each story is written by me, drawn by a different artist or art team, and every story is a totally different genre of horror. And one of the things that a lot of people would ask me was, when are you going to write a series about one person, like an ongoing thing about one guy or one girl, just one character. And what I ended up, doing was writing Tales of Mystery. Originally, the idea for Tales of Mystery was going to be hosted on a horror cable channel's website that never came to fruition. Because I originally pitched them Nightmare World. They said, we want something darker, and, like one character real dark. And I'm like, darker? Okay. And I was sitting in my I remember sitting exactly in my office thinking, like, okay. And I had the scenario for what became the first story in the first volume of Tales of Mystery, which I won't give away for people that haven't read it, but it does involve demon embryos crawling their way out of pregnant women's bellies. And
yes!
It's fun for the family. And after that scenario, this guy, Mystery, kind of wandered into my head, my psyche, and he's like, what's up? I'm like, hey, what's up? And that was it. He lived there ever since. And I tell people all the time, you know, Volume 3 of Tales of Mystery is going to be hitting stores any minute now. You know, the Kickstarter backers all got theirs, but if I had to write one comic forever, it'd be Tales of Mystery. That would be the one, hands down, until its natural and logical conclusion.
So. I can tell you Volume 3 hit the stores last week.
Oh, the happy day. Good deal. Yeah, I know some stores have been getting it in and some haven't yet, but good. Yeah, so everyone go check it out. And you can pick up Tales of Mystery Volume 3 and just start there. You can start with Volume 2. You can start with Volume 1. I have this crazy idea that anybody should be able to pick up a book at any time and just read it.
Oh, you mean like the difference between Terry Goodkind writing fantasy and Robert Jordan writing fantasy?
Yes. Yeah. Or even in the comic industry, you know, it's like, be able to pick up a book and freaking read it, man. That's fine. You know, when I'm at conventions, people are like, where do I start? Like, you can start anywhere. Like, Tales of Mystery Volume 3, if this Jason Pearson cover really speaks to you, start there. If you like the Eric Powell cover of Volume 2, start there. The Riley Rossmo cover of Volume 1, start wherever you want. You can just pick it up. I will make sure within the first story you have enough knowledge of what's going on to just jump in and enjoy. Then if you like it, you can go forward, you can go backward, whatever you want to do.
Okay, so with Volume 3, which I think pretty much the other two volumes were, you write all of it.
Yes.
But you have different artists for the different chapters.
Yeah. It's 5 22-page chapters, so 5 issues. We actually released the issues digitally on Comixology rather than printing them, and then we combined them in the book. But yeah, each story, each chapter focuses primarily on a different character or characters. So I kind of went back to my Nightmare World roots that I wanted each chapter to have a very different flavor. And I just really, really, really was fortunate to work with 5 amazing art teams. All of the artists I'd worked with before on something at that point, with the exception of Mariana and Ale, Alessandra, I'd worked with them on some stuff that hadn't seen print. But so, yeah, Mariana and Ale, and then, Seth. And Austin.
Don't forget Anthony.
Seth and Anthony. Absolutely. Seth and Anthony are like a tag team. Yes. Anthony actually colored Austin's story. Andy colored Seth the Moose's story. And then Len O'Grady and then Howie Knoll with a little surprise appearance by Josh Ross at the end. I was just tickled. And everybody brought their game to this book. And it shows. I mean, it's like the book I'm most excited for people to see on my table this convention season. It's like between that and Love Stories to Die For, I'm like, oh my God, people are just going to be losing their minds.
Excellent. No, I actually absolutely love the whole idea. It's like, hey, let's have a different team doing this one, different team doing this one. It's like, but it's still cool. Okay.
Well, yeah, and it works because each story, like I said, focuses on a different character. And I entertained the idea for about 30 seconds of having like one artist draw the whole thing. But really, I wanted like the Mystery and Brad Thompson story, the first chapter, to have a different vibe than Brad going to Dumashine Industries and meeting Thelma Lushkin, to have a different vibe than Mystery going out with Charity and Gannon, to have a different vibe than the story of Charity's origin, to have a different vibe than the Mystery in Space story, you know, and it works. It just
put
works.
Him in space, man.
Yeah. People kept thought I was messing around. Talk about your puns. The title of that chapter, the last chapter in the book, is Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Very cool. I picked up on that when I saw that. It's like, oh God, they put him in space, just like Jason.
Yes, Jason X. But that was Jason 9.
No, it was Jason X.
No, it was Jason X.
Yeah, it was Jason X.
It was Jason X. Jason in space.
Leprechaun and Hellraiser.
Yes. Well, next, so it just, it was fun. It's fun. And now we're getting ready to work on Tales of Mystery Volume 4 when I'm on break here between now and February. Seth the Moose is going to be drawing the whole thing.
Excellent.
Him and Anthony's coloring it. Anthony D. Lee.
Who I've had on the show before, by the way.
Yeah. Anthony's one of my besties, dude. He's such a great guy, man. Just fantastic. A great colorist. Never before we worked together on Tales of Mystery Carmageddon, Volume 2 that Seth drew, when Anthony started coloring the pages, Seth and I talked a lot about the look of Volume 2 of Tales of Mystery. I wanted to have a very, very specific look. And Anthony then with his colors. And when Anthony started doing the colors and stuff like that, never before had I written with the colors in mind as much as I did when Anthony colored Volume 2. And he really is now an integral part of what we do. Like, as soon as him and I start talking about a story that he's going to color, we start talking color theory and what it's going to look like. And, yeah, he is a very – not only is he one of my brothers, man. He's one of my best friends, but a very valuable member of our team. He's just – he's amazing. He's an amazing guy, an amazing friend. I'm just very, very fortunate to work with him.
And he's a nice guy.
A great guy, man. We're the best. That's the thing. It's like I work with such nice people. It just makes me feel sick sometimes. Like everyone, I mean, but no, I mean, you know, I was telling a friend of mine today. It's like I think when you're just genuinely a nice person, which probably ruins my rep to say that, but you attract the other nice people who we're just gonna do this and just rock and roll, man. You know, just go at it. So I'm just super fortunate.
Yeah, I think that in the horror, which is really weird, in horror. We tend to collect more of the nice people and weird people.
Yes.
And not so much of the angry and harsh and what the hell's wrong with you kind of people. It's more, okay, you're just weird, but that's okay. You're safe weird. You're angry yeah. weird. I don't really see you.
Yeah. Well, and you know, like I do horror shows and stuff like that as well. And one of the things is that when you go to a horror convention, the nicest
yeah.
people, by and large, are at your horror conventions. I mean, like I said, I do a lot of conventions. And I'll tell you what, man. Any time that I do a horror convention, I love my Comic-Cons, don't get me wrong. I do a lot of Comic-Cons, obviously. But when I do a horror convention, I'm home, man. Those are my people more than anything. I love comics. I love this medium. And I have so many friends I see at the Comic-Con. But it's just a different vibe when you go to a horror con because everyone's there not only for a niche, but a niche of a niche, you know. And just, yeah. The only truly bad experience I ever had at a horror con was this guy comes up to my table and basically starts – totally trying to hard sell me on his religious beliefs, which, you know, whatever. I mean, it's fine. I mean, that you believe what you want to believe. And I was trying to be cool with him. But then he started getting aggressive about it. I'm like, okay, man. Thanks, whatever. And he was just a real a-hole about it. Come to find out, this supposedly righteous guy snuck in. And something kept bothering me about it. I couldn't put my finger on it. Well, then it dawned on me after the fact he didn't have a wristband on. So this religious, pious guy who happened to be at the hotel and saw a horror convention snuck in and then was trying to, like, convert people, which was really just scummy. But that's the only bad experience I've ever had at a horror show.
Well, he was probably on a mission to try and convert people back because then he gets extra points to be able to join his whatever thing.
Yeah, and it was just really Bush League. I'm like, you're going to sit here and talking about being all holy and pious and being a good person and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you don't know me, dude. I'm a pretty straight-up guy. But then, too, it's like, then you snuck in? Really? Really?
You couldn't actually pay to get in and support people who were actually doing something?
Yeah, you stole. You know, you stole. You pay your $5 and walk in, man. You know, it's like, just get the hell out of here.
Exactly. But, yeah, no, I've been the same. I haven't been to anywhere near as many conventions as you have, but most of the genre conventions, most of the geek conventions I've ever been to, everybody's just generally out to have a good time and chill.
That's exactly it. You know, and when you go to Comic-Cons and stuff like that, I think the vibe's sometimes a hair different in Artist Alley because sometimes you get people who are hyper-aggressive about selling their stuff. And, and again, with me, it's like, look, you either like horror or you don't.
Yeah.
You're either going to like what I offer or not. And the biggest compliment I think I get about my work, or the compliment I guess I like the most, is when people say, you know, I normally don't like horror, but I really like your stuff. And I tell them, it's like, well, because I write good horror. You know, I don't write blood and boobs. I mean, there's nothing wrong. If you like blood and boobs, man, more power to you. You know, fine. But that's not what I do. You know, I like more of like the Twilight Zone and EC Comics and stuff that makes you think. And I think a lot of people take away from EC Comics, surprise ending. And, you know, there's more to it than that. There morality plays. You know, to me, good horror is what would you do if?
Yes.
And that's Nightmare World. That's Love Stories to Die For. That's Tales of Mystery. That is the underlying foundation of everything I write, is what would you do if? And I think that's such a fascinating question when you pose it against a supernatural backdrop or an absurd backdrop or terrifying backdrop. And you know, and people go to these cons, they just want to check out new stuff and meet new people. And yeah, just be cool to everybody, man.
Yeah. Because what are you going to get by being angry with people or being pushy or being stupid about stuff? Because that's a great turn off. In the sales game, the best way to push someone away, become aggressive.
That's exactly right. And people don't get it. And I've had this conversation with people about trying to hard sell or forcing a book in their hands.
Yeah. It's like,
even if they buy one, even if they feel bad and you manipulate them or hard sell them into buying one book, they're probably never going to buy another one even if they like it.
Yep.
Because they're going to have such resentment about the fact that got forced on them.
Yep.
You know, and it's just – it's such a bush league thing, you know, and it's like, be cool, man. They either – you're pot committed. You bought your table or you flew in, you drove in, whatever you did. Because I bring so many books, I try to drive rather than fly for all possible, although I'll be flying to Seattle in March for the first time. But I'm moving on up, moving on up.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just be good to people, because here's the thing, man, and you know this. People, the thing that people remember most is how you make them feel.
Absolutely.
That's it. And I am just so grateful to be at these shows, to have a chance to display my work. And if people want to check it out, I am just genuinely happy to present to them, because I'm happy, because if they buy my stuff, they're going to be happy. They're going to like it. And I know they're going to like it, and it's going to be fine, and it's going to be good. You know, and my return reader rate is very, very high. I mean, the Kickstarters show that, my convention appearances show that, you know.
And that's the true point of selling. You get people to come back of their own volition, spending their hard money. That's the real measure of a successful sale.
Well, yeah. And like I said, man, if you look at the Kickstarters I've run, they've gone up and up and up because people, you know, I treat people right. I pour the money back into the early adapters, into the backers, and they get good stuff. And I stay in touch with everybody, and you be cool about it, man. You know, I mean, you just be a good person. It's not complicated. I'm not, and mind you, I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I've done things that are, quite frankly, probably pretty terrible. We all have. But at the end of the day, just try to do more good than bad. Try to balance the books. Try to do right by people. If you fuck up, you try to make it right, and then you go on. You know, and that's it. You just do your best. You know, do the best you can with what you have at the time. Sermon over. See, the black suit's not just an act, man. I'm preaching. I'm preaching, Zach. I'm preaching.
Well, I was going to say I can give other analogies to the exact same thing, because I'm in the computer industry as well as many other things. And that's what everybody I say to people who are buying a computer. You're buying a box. It'll do wonderful things. But ultimately speaking, you're buying the company behind the box. How do they deal with you if you have a problem?
Exactly.
You have a problem, you want to get a solution. Do you get that solution quickly and within what you were expected and communicated? Awesome. You have to spend 30 hours just trying to get a hold of a live person that'll tell you, nah, you're screwed, you can't do jack? Well, that's obviously a terrible investment.
Right, right. That you're exactly right. And I think that's why we're seeing such an upsurgence. I just made up a word.
Yeah, both good.
Yeah, America.
America. But,
you know, yeah, in the States, and even in places like Michigan and things like that, especially in the Midwest, and I'm sure we're seeing it on the coasts as well, is the resurgence of your small little gastropubs and your small restaurants and things like that. Because people are figuring out, you know what? you treat people right, you do well by people, and you make good product, and you're going to be okay. It's a grind. It's always a grind. But you have to work hard. That's the first – whatever I do – this may shock those of you out there listening to this. I do panels in which I talk about writing and creating comics, especially if you don't draw them. And I end every panel I do. Like this year, I'm going to be doing some panels on Kickstarter, as people have been asking, for some reason. But
I'm going to go into part of that reason. So,
yeah, I always end my panels by saying there's three rules if you want to be successful in life. And with these three rules, you can do anything. You can succeed in anything as long as you do these three things. And each rule is only two words. So it's really pretty simple. Oh, I saw in the chat room someone's mentioning my boy Harlan Ellison. Harlan Ellison threatened to kick my to beat me up one time. But Harlan Ellison also gave me the best advice I was ever given. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But he's the three rules are work hard, be nice, and no excuses. That's it. If you work hard, you're nice to people, to everyone, like you said, the people up, down, sideways, whatever, and don't make excuses. Own your success, own your failure, own it all, and move forward. You work hard, you be nice, there's no excuses, you're going to do okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Harlan Ellison, someone mentioned him in the chat group. Harlan Ellison is one of my all-time favorite writers. And many, many years ago, me and a bunch of buddies of mine went to see him at a library, at a speaking engagement. He did this little library in, I think it was Avon Lake, Ohio, by where he grew up. And he's kind of just running the room, looking around and just messing with people. And he's going down the row of my buddies, and he goes, I could take you. I could take you. I could take you. I could take you. And then he gets to me, and he looks at me for a second, and looks to the dude next to me, who looks like a big Viking pirate. And he looks back at me, and he goes, I'd use you to hit him. I could take you. And he goes down the road. But he gave me the best advice, game-changing advice, and perhaps advice I took too much to heart, is many years ago, he I went to see him speak at another place. I think I saw him in Cleveland again when he was he did two Q&A and they did viewings of the documentary Dreams of Sharp Teeth. And really cool guy. No, actually, it wasn't even at that one. It was a different one. I've seen him three times. Dang. Well, anyway, I met him and I said to him, you know, this is the second time I saw him. And I'm like – he's kind of walking through the room, and I'm like, hey, it's, you know, it's nice to meet you, sir. He's like, what? What's that? He goes, he looks at me and goes, don't mumble. Don't ever mumble. I'm like, yes, sir. And I said, you know, Dirk Manning, nice to meet you, sir. All right. You know, that's it. But don't mumble. And like I said, some might say I've taken that advice to extent way too much.
What, you mean such as doing karaoke?
Karaoke, just putting it out there, man. You know, I really, when I'm not working, is and people laugh the when I say this, but I'm a pretty shy, introverted person.
No,
I really, yeah, exactly, yeah, you know, I am. You know, I don't like to talk about myself a lot. I prefer to talk about my work and things like that. But you know, I mean, ignore the man behind the curtain. You know. But as a result, very early on when I was doing shows with Josh Ross in Pittsburgh, I'll never forget, I'm sitting behind the table and we have some comics out. And I was doing some little self-published mini Nightmare World comics. And people are just walking by. People are just walking by. And I'm thinking, man, we have such good books on this table and people are walking by. And, oh, it just was killing me because I knew, like, people check it out, they like it. You know, there's stuff that's just objectively pretty damn good. In Nightmare World, I would like to say is objectively just pretty damn good. And I looked at Josh finally and I said, you know, no one is going to love our babies like we will.
That's true.
And I stood up and I just started talking and I haven't shut up since.
Excellent. Are you one of these guys that sits behind the table or in front?
Behind. You do not get in front of your table. That is Bush League bullshit.
Okay.
Because what it does is it creates an arc not only around your table that people are going to try to avoid you, but also then the table on both sides of you, if they see you standing there, they're going to move in a very wide – they're going to be in right or wrong too. We're going to be talking about this. It creates a big, giant – just dome around you and the people around you. You know, you buy the space behind the table. You didn't buy the aisle. You know, just like you don't put big giant displays on your table and block out the guys next to you. This is con 101 stuff. This is con etiquette 101. If you want to build a tower, build it behind your table. Yep. Don't block out the people next to you. That is he seems so nice. You know, but this is the stuff that people got to quit doing. Because it screws everybody. So, no, behind the... sorry.
Or what about the alternative, where you build an indent?
That's fine.
Okay.
Because going into your space, that's fine. But don't push your way out. I've actually thought about that. Like someone mentioned one time at the convention, I have so many books, like I should create an indent and people can walk back into my space and I just have bookshelves full of stuff. Like a little podium I can sign it because I stand anyway.
Yeah.
That's a... be pretty sweet, man. You know, so someday I might do that. Have like the Dirk Manning ice cream lounge or book lounge or something.
Or a popcorn machine.
Oh.
Yeah, fresh popcorn being popped all the time. You got that smell of butter. It's like, where's the butter?
You know, it's funny. Back in the day, I used to put little bowls of candy on my table and stuff like that. And I quit doing it because this is something another creator, Doug Paskevich, who did Arsenic Lullabies, despite his curmudgeonly ways, I'm a very big believer in giving credit where credit is due. And he made a good point. He said, nothing on your table should be free. Because if anything on your table is free, it means that it doesn't have value. And he's right. And what happened is when you put free candy on your table, people are at the show all day. They're walking around. They're going to come by. Grab a piece of candy. They don't want to hear your pitch. They don't want to get roped in anything. So they run away real quick without ever even looking at your books. Someone asked in the chat room, Wardog, about a hot cosplay chick. Can she stand in front? Same thing. No. You don't buy the aisle. The show, one of my worst performing shows ever, a friend of mine showed up in cosplay. And it destroyed my sales. And she was very pretty. Her cosplay was absolutely freaking gorgeous. And it even tied into a book I had out at the time. But, and I didn't know that she was going to show up and do this, but fine. You know, whatever, fine. Everyone wants to come get their picture.
Yep.
Girl in the cosplay.
Yep.
And then they don't look at the books. You know, I'm not there. I'll be real blunt, man. I don't need a beautiful woman at my table to sell my books. If I do, I'm not doing something right. You know, I'm just not. That's not to disparage cosplay. If you want to go be a cosplayer, go cosplay, man. Fine. I'm not one of these people that don't like cosplay. I sell books to cosplayers, too. And if they bought a ticket, that's fine. They can get in and get there. Some people say, oh, well, cosplayers don't buy books. They're just there to get looked at.
No. They're there to do just like everyone else.
Right, you know, that's fine. And, you know, a lot of times they cosplay for a while, then they come back and not in costume, and they buy books. And a lot of times people that can't pay, they just hang out in the lobby and cosplay. And that's fine. You know, let people do what they do. It's not a big deal.
And on top of that, even if they don't buy today, they learn about you. They say, oh, when I get a job and I actually can afford things, that was really cool looking. I can buy that later.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's... You know, let people do what they want, but absolutely not. You don't buy the aisle. You buy the table and the space behind it. And like I said, this idea of people, you know, oh, I'm going to have a beautiful woman at my table behind there and stuff like that. You know, get the fuck out of here, man. Stand on your own merit. What are you? Are you so worried that your book can't sell if you don't sell the illusion of TNA with your book? Really? Now, again, if you're a beautiful female creator or you have a beautiful girlfriend or wife or whatever you have, and they're sitting there behind you, and if you want them to look nice, fine. But if that is how you think you are going to sell books, that's I don't want to be judgmental, but that's not the I'll just say that's not the way I prefer to do business.
Well, that's good. It's a good point of view on it. Actually, I'm agreeing with everything you mentioned on that because it makes perfect sense, especially the ownership of the aisle space. I mean, what's the biggest okay, I'll give you an example. I've been to Fan Expo. Fan Expo gets 150,000 people.
Yeah, I really want to get up to Fan Expo one of these times.
Dude, next time you go up there, I'll be meeting you because I'm with the Horror Writers Association there. I'm there for the whole weekend.
Nice.
But yeah, you get into Artist Alley, it's like you gotta pry your ass through every corner to see whatever you're gonna see. You don't want to be hitting those obstacles.
One of the best things I've seen is I've seen some conventions do this where they have designated photo areas in every aisle. You know, they literally take out an Artist Alley table and have people do pictures there. And it's tough because conventions don't want to lose that money because it'd be a couple hundred bucks they're losing. But, you know, you have designated spots to take pictures. And sometimes I've had to tell people, I'm like, hey, pardon me. You know, can you like if I have someone next to me, it's really popular as well, and their line starts to encroach on my space in front of my table, get blocked out. I'm like, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you wrap the other way? You know, and most people are, again, just be nice to people. They're cool about it. Many, many years ago, one of the first C2E2 shows in Chicago, Amanda Connor was next to me. And Amanda Connor, back then she was even super huge. You know, I mean, just so popular and so good to everybody. And she was just incredible because she said – you know, people in her, like, people were like lining up down the aisle to see her and they were blocking the table. I was at a couple of the ones. She said, guys, I can't sign anything unless you all back up and line up in the middle of the aisle so you're not blocking the tables.
Nice.
Which was nice. And Amanda is just a wonderful human being, just a true, and that was class.
Yep.
Complete and total class. You know, and again, It's, you know, work hard and rule number two, be nice. Yeah. She didn't have to do that for me. She didn't know who I was from Adam, you know. But anyway, yeah, this is all stuff I'll talk about in the next Right or Wrong book. But if you like this advice, get Right or Wrong Volume 1, A Writer's Guide to Creating Comics on Amazon.
Yes.
But, yeah, Volume 2 is going to be a lot about the convention stuff and all that. So.
Okay. Well, you've mentioned it a couple times. It's been mentioned in the chat room a couple times, and it's in my list of things to talk about.
Oh, what'd I do?
Oh, no, it's a good thing. Your Kickstarter
yes.
is actually quite – your last Kickstarter, which just finished recently, is quite phenomenal. I'm looking at this thing, and I'm looking at – that's a whole lot of, like, bonus shit going on there for doing all these little things. And not only that, you hit a benchmark there for getting your thing done, 45K. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. Yeah. I wish I was talking to you right now with $45,000 in my pocket.
Well, we know that that's not how that works.
Yeah,
but
that's I have to print $45,000 worth of stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah. it's still pretty overwhelming. It's cool a couple levels. One, you know, Josh Blaylock, who writes Mercy Sparks, and, you know, I published the book Devil's Due. I set the record for the biggest Kickstarter ever for a Devil's Due project.
Nice.
So that's some nice little bragging rights. That's really cool. But the bigger thing is Nightmare World is the first comic I ever wrote. And it's a comic I stand by to this day. It's you know, I hate to sound like this guy, but it's good. The stories are good. The art is incredible. And the setup on Nightmare World is, like I said, it's 52 stories. Each story is written by me, drawn by a different artist or art team. And what's cool is every story is standalone. Every story is a totally different genre of horror. But as you go through and read all the 52 stories together over the course of the four volumes of trade paperbacks or the one big omnibus, all the standalone stories weave into one giant story. It's a really cool project. And again, it's like what I talked about earlier. It's something only I could do. No one else can do this. You know, I mean, this is my baby. And that book has had such a history, man. We originally self-published it online. I promoted it, like I said, back online in the MySpace days. We got picked up by a smaller publisher, put out a one shot. The publisher kind of got shaky. That didn't work out. The website I was hosting the online comic on, the domain got like taken hostage by the company. The website crashed. Came back from that, got picked up by, finished the whole series online, got picked up by Image Comics for their online comics hub, and Image Comics said, well, we don't know if this is going to do well or not. You know, it's horror. We're not sure. They gave it a shot. Nightmare World was the number one read of all their online comics for the whole 2-year run.
Nice.
They published 3 of the graphic novels. They didn't publish the 4th one. So then for years, the series left incomplete. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, I want to get this albatross off my neck. Every show I go to, people say, where's Nightmare World 4? Where's Nightmare World 4? And I'm like, oh, I have to kind of get this political answer. Well, you know, it's going to be coming out. It's going to be coming out, you know.
Well, just so you know, it could be worse.
Oh, it could always be worse.
It could have been the difference between the very last issue of Ghost Rider and where they actually stopped publishing it.
Yeah.
10 years?
I was a Ghost Rider fan, too. Absolutely. That stuff was crazy go nuts.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. You know, it's like, what happened?
Yeah. But, okay, keep going.
Yeah, no, so all this stuff, you know, so I end up, I sell through all the Image stock and stuff like that. And Image, and Jim Valentino was very good to me. He gave me his blessing to do what I wanted with the series. It's creator-owned, and he didn't give me any grief about it. So then we launched the Kickstarter to launch volume – and again, be nice. Rather than launch a Kickstarter for volume 4 and then a separate one for the omnibus, I said, look, guys, you can just get volume 4 or you can get the omnibus. You can get them both, however you want to do this. I'm not going to double dip on anybody, you know. And all that being said, I knew we'd do okay. What I really, really wanted – out of this campaign was I really wanted to unlock the Nightmare World Bible at 26,000 and get a leather bound edition of the book, you know, to offer the Kickstarter readers. That was my ultimate goal. And I thought by the last, you know, the last couple of days, if we can get to 26,000, our funding goal was 13,000. If we can double it, dude, that would be incredible. We will rock out. Well, about 13 or so days into the campaign, in the middle of the election in the United States and all this other crazy stuff going on, about halfway through, we unlocked the leather bound, and we had roughly half the campaign left. And I'm like, holy crap, what do we do? So I talked to Josh Blaylock, you know, Devil's Due, and I said, okay, you know, we're doing some audiobooks. I got a buddy who's a great musician. We'll do some stuff there. We'll put a score on the audiobooks that you get as a stretch goal. And then I said, in a perfect world, I'd love to do a bonus comic, The Nightmare Nomicon, which is like the director's cut behind the scenes of all the bonus stories and things like that. And he agreed to do that. We talked about what it would cost to build a print the comic and give it to people. So we did that. And then I asked him, I said, Josh, because we already got, like, the people that back it on Kickstarter get this leather-bound, gold-gilded page, ribbon bookmark, super deluxe version of the book, right? And I said, okay, how much do we have to raise to do a slipcase? And he told me the number, and he's like, it's like a little over 40,000. And I say, okay, well, what if it's like 42,000? And it was just like the whatever, get the hell out of here goal, you know. And he's like, fine, if you raise 42,000, we can do the slipcase. I'm like, okay. And then we got to over 45,000. And to be able to put the nail in the coffin of this series, no offense to my zombie brethren.
Yeah.
But to be able to have a definitive, deluxe, leather-bound, Bible variant, slipcase edition of this book is the send-off. And I have it limited edition and only available to the people that got it on Kickstarter. That's the stuff, man. I mean, that, amen. You know, after carrying that albatross for 15 years around my neck, to be able to send it off this way is, is a dream. And I tell the backers, you know, I did live video updates on Facebook every time we unlocked a stretch goal. I'm like, you guys are killing me.
Or from the shower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that was like one of them. You know, I was like, the deal was whenever we unlocked a stretch goal, I would live stream it ASAP. And one of them was like, I made a joke online. I'm like, you guys better not unlock this stretch goal the next couple hours, or like the next hour, because I'm getting in the shower. And then, of course, you know, unlocked the stretch goal. I'm in a hotel room because I was traveling. And I'm like, oh God, like, fine. Fuck you guys. I'll live stream, you know, in the shower. So it was pretty funny. What we ended up doing was like I got the bathroom all steamed up and stuff like that, and live stream from like a steamy bathroom, so you couldn't quite see me what was going on. But just to send the book out that way, and how fortunate I am to have readers that rally behind the project. Because here's the other thing. I had very limited publicity outside media on this book. You know, Jew Terror did a really nice piece, Bleeding Cool. A couple of my podcasting brethren and stuff like that helped me out. And we did podcasts. But that was about it. It was word of mouth. It was social media. And it was the people in my Facebook group, the Friends of Dirk Manning support group, and people on my email list, and people that love the series really, really came forward. And we shattered records. And to be able to do that version of the book, man. I mean, it chokes me up. You know, I'm getting choked up now just talking about it. I mean, just thank you. You know, what a way to go out. What a way to go out, you know. Red Buttons, the old comedian, has an old skit, Never Got a Dinner. And the premise of this joke, and he told this joke hundreds of times, was he'd like roast people, like old 70s comedians and stuff like that.
Oh, I watched it.
Yeah, who got dinners, you know. And it's like, he's like, this guy, why are we giving Zombie Zach a dinner when there's all these famous people that never got a dinner? And then he would go on like, Adam from the Garden of Eden. And he'd say something about Adam, never got a dinner. And on and on. And oh my God, he's just whip smart and just funny as hell.
Holy
and
crap, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think about the fact that, you know, I may never, I may not get an Eisner. I may not be writing for Marvel or DC and stuff like that. And these are the things that people are looking at and saying, that's how you measure success. To me, having the backing and the support of so many people, that good people that backed my project and believed in it. And to be fair, don't be wrong, they wanted that big giant slipcase as well. You know, no act is selfless. But to do all that stuff to allow us to send Nightmare World out and then really weave it into mystery and things like that going forward in this fashion. What an honor. That's my dinner. That's my celebration dinner right there. So
we'll give you the slow clap, but without actually clapping. We'll just pretend that making the noise.
Yeah, that sounds perfect.
Because otherwise it sounds weird on a microphone.
We'll just take a second.
Yeah.
Okay, that was good. Thank you.
That was good. Okay. So, we got about 5 minutes left, and then there's another show coming on after us.
Yes, sir.
I know you have this special super-duper project coming out shortly.
I do. We have...
You say about it?
Love Stories to Die For.
Nice.
I have not announced this anywhere yet, so the people listening to the show will know this exclusively. This sound right here, you hear this? You hear that?
Nice.
You hear this right here? This is the physical copies. I just got my copies today of Love Stories to Die For. People that the Nightmare World sounds interesting. Love Stories to Die For is five full-length, 22-page stories. Each story is written by me, drawn by a different artist, art team. And these are stories that basically were too big to tell in Nightmare World. There is a science fiction story, an evil guardian angel story, a vampire versus Viking story, pro wrestling story, and yes, Zach, a zombie story.
Excellent.
Yeah. And then I added a surprise bonus story at the end, a pro story, which was so painful to write that I almost had to hand it off to my editor at one point, called If You Call, I Will Not Answer. And it's intense. Beautiful cover by Nia Ruffino. So this is going to be in stores in the next couple weeks here. Tales of Mystery Volume 3, as you said, is in stores now. Nightmare World Volume 4, the Nightmare World Omnibus. And then that'll be, you know, my releases I'll be touring on here for a minute. After that, I'll be working on more of Mariachi with El Arto Studios, Chris Sanchez and John Marroquin, Right or Wrong Volume 2, and one or two other things that I can't talk about quite yet. One of them, I don't want to get it twisted. Band, rock, rap band. So, but yeah, so some good things are coming out. There. How was that for a quick tease? Someone said something in the chat room here a second ago. What was it about? Oh, whether or not you should dress up at a show.
And somebody else had an actually really good response to that.
Yeah, and it was Kiss Kiss. Don't you need a look or a style so that people see your face, remember your work? Dress professional. You're at work.
Yes.
You know, I wear a black suit, but I wear a black suit because I like black, and I wear a suit because I'm working.
Wait, you mean there's other colors?
I would prefer not to think about it.
Okay, good.
But yeah, you know, just look nice and be professional. And ultimately, like I said, people remember how you make them feel more than anything else.
Exactly. If you make them feel comfortable, they feel comfortable. You make them feel like you're a dick, they will remember that and never talk to you ever again.
Right. And then people say, he seems so nice. Now I read his books. And oh, my God, what the hell's wrong with that guy?
Okay. So, yes, there is that in horror. We get this all the time, right? Uh-huh. Oh, how can you write such terrible things? You seem like such a nice person. Yeah, I'm not doing any of that.
No, I don't do it in real. It's my therapy, man. I get that stuff out on the page. That's it. I guess that's all I can say about it. I get that writing's my therapy. I get it out on the page.
Exactly. And how can people find you to stalk you and continue finding out more fantastic things coming out from you?
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr to a small extent, at Dirk Manning. Look for the picture of the guy in the black suit with the top hat and the scarf and sunglasses. I do not wear a top hat, scarf, and sunglasses in real life. DirkManning.com is my webpage. I update that. I have a mailing list that people can sign up to. I send out an e-newsletter once a month. And if you're on Facebook, if you go look for the Friends or Fiends of Dirk Manning Support Group, it's the Friends of Dirk Manning Support Group, but the R is in parentheses. Very active group, amazing people. We talk about horror and comics and heavy metal and ice cream and Cthulhu, all the things that are good in life.
Cthulhu!
Cthulhu forever.
Cthulhu forever.
Or so, Cthulhu, however you want to say it. So.
As long as you don't call him late for dinner.
Amen. The faithful will be eaten first. Oh, and Jack, this is a trade paperback. It has those two stories you're talking about in the chat room and three that have never been printed before. So I have a beautiful Nia Ruffino cover. So when I see you on the road, Zach, I got another book for you to buy. You're so – or not Zach, sorry, Jack. So you're very fortunate, Jack. You're welcome.
Yeah, Jack loves buying his books.
Jack's a good guy, and he has one of the most expansive Dirk Manning collections of anyone I know. He has a lot of the super rare stuff, even. So,
well, he's kind of a quirk in that he likes to collect all that stuff.
He's a good guy, man. He's one of my. I'm sitting talking to you in a room surrounded on all sides by books. I am literally, yeah, every wall of my office has books on it. So,
I'm not going to disparage that in the least because I look at my walls, and there's not a single bare space for the most part.
Mm-mm.
So we won't say anything bad.
No.
I'm gonna try and wrap this up now with a flying spaghetti monster. What? Okay. Oh, I think he's talking about Cthulhu. Okay, good. Cool. I will say cookies are forever. Ice cream lasts for at least a little bit.
That's fair. I can't argue. That's why you have to eat it quickly.
Sorry, you kind of went quiet there.
Oh, I apologize. I was thinking about ice cream. I said, that's why I can't argue with that. That's why you have to eat your ice cream very quickly.
Yes, because otherwise it's like yesterday's dinner. Right. But in the meantime, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been really awesome having you here. I'm now going to have to wait for Right or Wrong 2 because I want to see where you went to with Kickstarter, social media, and all these other wonderful things and tools that are about the writing experience.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on, man. It's a pleasure to finally get to talk in person. I look forward to broaching Canada and seeing all my Canadian friends up there at some point, and you as well. And you as well.
And them too.
No, thank you, man. I really, It's been a pleasure and honor, and thank you to everybody in the chat room, and thank you for having me on. And hopefully we'll get to do this again sooner than later, man. Hopefully we don't have to wait another 10 years to talk on the show here.
Absolutely. Anytime you're ready, more than happy to have you back on again.
Well, I'm going to take you up on that, my friend. Thank you.
Excellent. And thanks for coming out. Everybody in the chat room, thanks for coming out and playing with us there. And everybody else in the other places and stuff in the streams, you have yourself an amazing After Rotten good time.
Have a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their pick.